Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Matt Cook at the tail end of the Peptide Summit, but this is probably going to be one of my favorite interviews, and I was super looking forward to it. And I want to introduce you all to a super wonderful person and a very amazing doctor. And I think one of the top doctors that when I have questions, this is somebody who I reach out to and ask questions to, because I regard her as somebody with great clinical experience in terms of taking care of a lot of patients with very significant complex illness. We have a similar practice and we think similarly. So I always love to talk to people who are doing the same type of stuff that I do, hear what they're doing, learn from them and share what we're up to. And there's nobody that I'd like to do that more so with than Dr. Nafisa Parpia. So here you are. And welcome to, and I look forward to talking to you today.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you so much for having me here. I always love to chat with you and learn from you as well. Truly, it's just always so great to be with you. So thank you for having me here.
Thanks. So you know, as I think about the last couple of years, the term that we probably have been talking about for 10 years, but that has been coming up again and again as a player that's causing trouble in the world and in our biology and our bodies, is immune dysregulation. So, right. And the title of my conversation with you is Peptide Roles in Immune Dysregulation. So let's dive into that.
Perfect. Thank you. So most of my patients have complex chronic illness. So we're seeing these patients, and I know you are too, with these mystery illnesses. Nobody, not too many other doctors can figure out. These patients have been sick for so long. They've been to at least 5 other doctors. Some of them have been to 20, right? And in every system of their body is affected. So we're talking about chronic infections and toxins that are causing oxidative stress and immune dysregulation and inflammation throughout the whole system. So a lot of the times patients come and they have, you know, they may have a diagnosis of infections already, and they want me to treat the infections right away, or they've come and they've had the infections treated and it's backfired and they don't understand why. And so a big piece of what I do is use peptides for immune modulation before I even begin killing, before I even begin detox. And so now with the advent of these peptides, people who are sick, it would take maybe 3 or 5 years to treat them, 6 to 12 months.
So give me your definition of immune dysregulation and then give me your definition of immune modulation, because those are two terms that I want people really to walk away from and understand.
Absolutely. So a lot of my patients, and I'm sure yours too, they have on one hand, they have a hyperactive immune system. On the other hand, they have a weak immune system. And how can that be at the same time? First of all, I want to give examples of how I see both of these things happening at once. So my patients have autoimmunity. They have mast cell activation syndrome. So that's an immune system that is overactive. On the other hand, they can't mount an appropriate immune response to kill off an infection that they should be able to kill off, for example, viruses or tick-borne diseases. So this is happening at once. And there is research that shows that environmental toxins cause this immune dysregulation. And we know that tick-borne diseases in combination with the toxins cause this imbalance. Too much activity, hyperactivity in the wrong direction, and not enough activity.
Kind of like the immune system got all riled up and it's throwing a lot of punches, but there's some friendly fire. You're hitting people you shouldn't be hitting. But then you're just a little dysfunctional in terms of doing the actual job at hand.
Right. I'm telling my patients, actually, it's like having an untrained fighter in the ring that doesn't.
Oh, that's a good one.
Right. That doesn't know where to throw the punches and the kicks. It's throwing them all right, but just in the wrong direction. So mm-hmm. We train the immune system. Now, Matt, that was something I couldn't really do before the peptides came along. I mean, I wanted to, of course I wanted to, you know, and I tried, but everything else was not precise enough. This is what I love about the peptides. They're so tissue specific, like nothing else. And so then we've got these peptides that can modulate the immune system in a way that allows me to start detox and killing much faster.
And how would you define immune modulation in that case?
Yeah. So I'm working on calming mast cell activation syndrome. I'm working on calming autoimmunity. That first, before I start to work on upregulating the immune system. So.
Perfect. So then let's talk about what from your perspective, what have been your number one peptides for immune modulation?
Yeah. So of course, BPC-157, it calms down. It brings inflammation down in the system, and TB4 FRAG. I noticed that calms. Now I've had patients, they've come into me and they've been on TA1 first. And they said, that was really hard on me. And I say, well, you know what? You already have autoimmunity. Your immune system is already in overdrive. TA1 is going to kick that up. So that wasn't, sure, it was the right peptide for you, but at the wrong time, right? Mm-hmm. Timing is critical. So I like to use TB4 FRAG first, along with KPV to help calm down mast cell activation syndrome.
Which fragment, 1-4 or the 17 to 23?
The 17.
Okay. And the 17 to 23 for people listening is also known as TB500, which is a fragment of thymus and beta 4. It's smaller, more potent, more effective, more anti-inflammatory than the whole protein. And less reactions, including mast cell activation, and will help calm down. So then, yeah, that's what I've noticed also.
Right. And Amlexinox for its mast cell stabilizing properties as well. I like it a lot. So I'm bringing those ones in the beginning: TB4 FRAG, BPC-157, KPV, and sometimes often more than sometimes Amlexinox if mast cell is really an issue. And then of course I'm bringing in herbs for mast cell activation syndrome, and I'm giving low dose naltrexone. So I'm giving a lot of other things in addition to the peptides, but I can go lower dose or I don't have to give the other things as much.
What herbs will you use for mast cell?
So I like Perilla, and I like the product Neuroprotect. Because by Algonaut, because they have a lot of herbs in there that's going to help with it all. I like All Clear, the quail egg as well. Those are my favorites.
It's interesting, as you're taking care of people with complex problems, sometimes herbal support can be super helpful, and especially sort of often. Combinations that will have a diversity of herbs at low dose, I've also found to be quite helpful at having both a balancing effect on the immune system and the neurological system, I would say.
Right. But then what I found, Matt, is that the ones who are super, super sensitive, they're even going to have a mast cell reaction to the herbs that are supposed to calm mast cells. And I've noticed that peptides, you give somebody like that KPV intravenously, they can handle that, but they can't handle oral herbs.
What sort of dose would you give?
I start with just 1/8 of a vial in someone like that.
So like a milligram or two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would support that as a great dose. And then what sort of dosing do you like for the TB4 FRAG?
So I'm giving them oral TB4 FRAG. I can start them, I found, at 4 caps twice a day for 3 weeks. Then I'll bring it down to 3 caps twice a day for another 4 weeks, and then an ongoing 2 caps twice a day. And I have them on these for months.
So a few milligrams. I had a friend come with horrible GI symptoms and probably some mast cell activation and some SIBO and a bunch of stuff. And I was just kind of, and they just showed up And then I was like a Friday at the end of the day. And then I walked back into my office and I had TB4 frag and BPC orally and KPV. And so I said, here, just take these and come see me in the on Monday. And then he came in Monday. I was like, oh, I'm a lot better. So it's good. Right. Good one.
These peptides are magic. I have never met any other, honestly, I've never met any other nutraceuticals or medications even that can have such a specific effect so quickly and toxic.
And for people listening, KPV is related to MSH, this protein that's in the brain that probably is, and tell me what you think about this idea, that MSH is kind of an anti-inflammatory in the brain. And there's a theory that if we're exposed to a lot of toxins, particularly mycotoxins, that your levels of MSH start to really come down. Mm-hmm. And then we have a theory that that seems to correlate with a lot of limbic system dysfunction.
Right.
Then your people start to feel terrible. And then that anti-inflammatory effect of MSH, I think that one of the things that it does is it regulates and manages inflammation and potentially from mast cells, because if you give the KPV, we have found that to be very helpful for mast cell activation. And just for, as you hear this idea, one thing that happens is you get exposed to a toxin, these mast cells come and then they release a bunch of histamine. Mm-hmm. And then they cause some inflammation as an attempt to create inflammation to deal with whatever they're responding to. But if they get overly triggered, now you're getting these inflammatory reactions that are happening like little fires all over your body to a variety of stimuli.
Absolutely. And the mast cells are, pretty much everywhere in the body. We've got them in the gut, in the muscles, in the bones, in the brain. So these patients who have symptoms everywhere, it's the mast cells that are flaring in addition with the in inflammation from the infections and the toxins. But speaking of MSH and modulating that, I love melanotan for that.
Oh yeah.
Right? Because it modulates everything that's coming down from the hypothalamus, including hormones. So then if I start them with melanotan, I don't have to give them as much bioidentical hormone therapy. I do, of course, they need it, right? For a foundation of their treatment. But
are you doing melanotan 1 or 2?
1.
How much are you starting with?
Sorry, melanotan 2. I forget. I think it's just 2.1 cc's twice a week. How many milligrams? But
melanotan is this interesting peptide that regulates hormonal axes. It regulates the immune system. It can stimulate your melanocytes.
Right.
So then it kind of, they call it the Barbie doll peptide because it can make you tan. And then it has a side effect for guys of giving an erection. But it also can have a side effect of some sexual sort of interest in women too.
Right. And there's so many peptides. Well, not so many, but, kisspeptin and PT-141, those mm-hmm. help so much with sexual health. Mm-hmm. So I give that to my patients because so many of these patients who are chronically ill, that part of their life isn't satisfying either.
Has your experience with, in terms of sexual sort of, and so then one idea would be to take melanotan. The side effect of melanotan is it causes a little bit of nausea. Mm-hmm. And so you have to build up to that. PT-141 is this other peptide that you can do that for men will have the side effect of an erection, and it comes centrally. So you can combine it with Viagra or Cialis. And then for women, it will also increase arousal. Right. How has your experience been in terms of men and women with PT-141?
So depending on age, so if a guy who's pretty healthy comes in, I have a range of patients. Most of them are quite sick, but then I've got some people who are coming in for optimization. Mm-hmm. If a guy's coming in for optimization and he wants some PT, if he has it as needed, and he wants to have sex a few times a week, and he has it as needed. It can be too much, I've noticed. So just lowering how many times a week you might take it, maybe twice a week. I've got young guys in my patient who've got hormonal levels of an old man because the infections have done that, the metals, the glyphosate, all of that has done that. So as I'm working on killing infections, detoxing them, I've got to help with their endocrine system. So, I'm giving you a roundabout answer. I'm giving them Kisspeptin to help increase their testosterone. Mm-hmm. I don't have to give them Clomid anymore for that, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. So Kisspeptin, and then I'll add in the PT-141. And for them, they can have it as needed, on whatever day they want to have sex. And same with men who are older than 60, I've noticed, they can use it as much, at any time.
How about how helpful has it been for women?
It's been pretty helpful. Uh-huh. It's aroused their sexual interest for sure. And some of them report more sensation. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, of course, I also like to give women bioidentical hormone vaginal cream as well, with estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Women who have hit menopause, they often need it, or they're perimenopausal, they need it. That will also help with sensation and help decrease pain with intercourse. And also same with women who have complex chronic illness, and they have those issues as well, as if they're in menopause, but they shouldn't be yet.
And then you do the O shot and the P shot?
I'm not doing the P shot. We do it at our office. Dr. Gordon and Dr. Kunkel does that. And I haven't done it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's, it's kind of interesting, the sexual health conversation with the peptides is to me super interesting. I've experimented with it myself, taking it, a bunch of times just to kind of try to understand what was happening, and I find they kick in somewhere between like 1 and 2 or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dose range I typically like is somewhere between 1 and 2 milligrams.
Uh-huh.
And so then sometimes if you do 1 milligram, it will be like a little bit light. And sometimes if you do 2 milligrams, it will be like an unbelievable, sort of turn on. Uh-huh. And it's interesting that it's almost like you get on a scale from 1 to 10 of being sort of quote unquote turned on, it's like a 9.
Right.
But then what I think happens is then all of a sudden you kind of feel okay about yourself and you feel okay about the partner. And then you end up, it kind of drives you into kind of a deeply connected vibe.
Exactly.
Which would be, a lot of times I think we take substances to try to drive ourselves, and who did that? Like almost all of humanity for the last 3,000 years.
Exactly, Matt.
But then this is I find it to be an interesting thing because it drives a lot of interest, but then it also, you're totally clear in your thought process.
Exactly. I mean, there's so many patients when they're sick, they're not being intimate with their partners anymore. And they're missing that. Their partners are missing that. And when we're able to provide them with that, I mean, their relationships become closer. They feel better about themselves all over. It's such an important part of our health that I think people aren't talking about enough.
Yeah. And then PT-141 probably, it will have a little bit of an effect on melanocytes. Mm-hmm. And so then sometimes I've had some Jewish, I have lots of Jewish friends and family. Mm-hmm. And so then also lots of Persian friends and family. Mm-hmm. And so then I've noticed PT-141 and melanotan in those populations, and then in many other populations, will cause them to tan more quickly.
Right.
And so then I just remember to be a tiny bit cautious on the melanotan for anyone with slightly darker skin. And then that's also, interestingly, even like for Ashkenazi Jews, that would be normally like almost the same, very light complected.
Uh-huh.
And then I've had a few of my friends, and I didn't prescribe it for them, but who took relatively high doses of melanotan and then were tan for like 6 months.
Yeah, Jamie Kunkel, Dr. Kunkel in our office, he's been taking melanotan, and he's got these dark lashes, and it actually looks great. It's a new look, a brand new look on him.
maybe that's a new look. But then that's a neat conversation, because then it's kind of like, you know, I feel like we were having this conversation about PTSD, you know, this morning. I was talking to Dr. McElroy, and then, you know, Barb overheard us, and she was like, everybody that has complex illness has a little medical PTSD.
Absolutely.
And I think that kind of drives us. I think when you have my play acting version of it is that when you're in PTSD, it's kind of like you're running away or hiding a little tiny bit. And right. Then from an emotional perspective or an intimacy perspective, I think that happens. And so then kind of neat that you could do something that would sort of all of a sudden turn that back on and you feel okay about it.
Right.
And it's awesome. And I think, and you've had good success with this with some of your patients with complex illness.
Yes.
Now, the addendum that I will say about this, and then I think it's fun, and I'm also happy to sort of talk about dose and numbers on this one. For people who are totally, like, let's say I took 10 pro football players. You could give them all 2 milligrams of melanotan and probably nothing happens to any of them. Now, I have seen probably 20 or 30% of people with complex illness will react a little bit to PT-141. And so then what I'll do.
Way less. I'm giving them not very much.
Oh, how much are you giving them?
Like 0.1 of a cc. I'll have them do that just twice a week.
Yeah, so then this is perfect, because I've seen some people have headaches from it, and and so then what we'll do is we'll do, like, you know, 100 micrograms, which is a tenth of a milligram, or 200 or 300 micrograms, and then slowly work them into that super low dose. And interestingly, melanotan also can cause the nausea, but if you kind of watch your skin coloration and then start at a super low dose and then kind of do grade up on that, then I notice people tend to do well. So that's a kind of a helpful tip. In terms of sequencing, so then let's say somebody came to see you and you realize, oh, okay, they've got mast cell activation, immune dysregulation, stuff's out of control. So BPC, TB4 frag, KPV. How long does that go? And then what are sort of strategically sort of your next ideas?
Yeah. So I'm actually going to have them on those peptides throughout the entire treatment.
Okay, good. And then what was the other one you mentioned?
Amlexinox.
Oh yeah, what is that?
So Amlexinox, it has they use it in Japan for conjunctivitis, for bronchial issues, and it has a mast cell stabilizing effect.
Oh really? Is that and how do you give that?
Injectable.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it helps a lot with people who have histamine issues. So I'm starting there.
What dose would you give?
Again, about I'm forgetting the milligrams, but 0.1 cc. So give it to them 3 days a week.
Okay.
Help themselves 3 days a week.
Now, before we go on, then if I I would totally agree on, you know, your ideas in terms of mast cell activation. Okay. And so let's say some BPC, some TB4 fragments, and certainly KPV. And then you can do oral KPV and BPC, you can do injectable. And then, you know, you mentioned the IV, which I'm happy that you did, because I think that that's a game changer. Before we go on, you are deeply knowledgeable about mast cell. Give me your little, if I said, oh, okay, I got a patient and then they did that and they're getting some benefit, but they're still having mast cell activation. And then they tried the amylexinox. I like that. So then what would be two or three or four other things that you would be on your backup strategy for mast cell activation?
I'm giving them ketotifen at night.
Okay.
Okay. Starting if they're super sensitive, some people get really groggy from ketotifen in the morning. If that's the case, they only get 0.5 milligrams at bedtime. Normally I can start people at 1.5 milligrams at bedtime, 30 minutes before bed with a little bit of food. I'm giving them cromolyn. So cromolyn, 100 milligrams, 30 minutes before each meal. That stabilizes mast cells in the gut. And I've also noticed it stabilizes mast cells in the genitourinary tract. So
people, oh, really?
Yeah, so people who think that they're having recurrent UTIs, but they're not. We do the urinalysis, we do the urine culture. They've gone to see the urologist. They don't have IC. Some of them, IC meaning interstitial cystitis for our audience, and some of them do have IC. I give them cromolyn, it calms it down, which was really, I was giving them the cromolyn for their gut. I wasn't expecting it to help with IC, but I've seen it repeatedly with that.
Oh, really? So, yeah. 100 milligrams before each meal?
Yeah. And then, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say also Allegra.
Okay.
Starting off sometimes, depending on how sensitive the person is, 60 milligrams twice a day, 12 hours apart, working their way up to 180 milligrams twice a day, 12 hours apart, singular, also 5 milligrams twice a day.
Okay, so then this is good. So then what, let's go back and we'll go through each one of these, because this is helpful for people to hear what these categories are and how these drugs are working.
So
maybe we'll start with the cromolyn. That cromolyn is just a direct mast cell stabilizer, right?
Exactly. For the gut, and I believe for the rest of the mucosa, because I see it as well.
And then ketofen.
Mast cell stabilizer.
Also, do you see any side effects with ketofen?
So the one side effect that can be for some people is they're groggy in the morning. If that's the case, I just have them dial the dosage down.
Okay.
Right. Oh, a lot of times hydroxyzine is going to work a lot for people. Just a low dose, 25 milligrams, four times a day. These are for the people who are highly, highly, their mast cells are highly on, they're on a hair trigger.
The mechanism on that is?
I think it is a mast cell stabilizer, but I can't remember.
And then there's a whole bunch of medications that are basically antihistamine type of medications that people would use.
Right. Allegra. Sometimes Benadryl IV for those patients who are super sensitive, before we give them the rest of their IV therapies, a Benadryl IV.
How much will you give them?
25.
I have also found, and Benadryl is kind of sedating, but that it can be helpful along those lines. And then the nice thing is, I also have a fairly similar practice to Nafisa in terms of IV therapy, because I'm a wannabe naturopath.
Not very many naturopathic doctors do it the way I do it too, though. You know who trained me was Dr. Isaac Elias.
Oh, so then we have to have a shout out to Dr. Isaac Elias, because I have a newfound friend in Dr. Elias, because basically about 200 different accounts times Nafisa told me, oh, Isaac Elias this, Isaac Elias that. And so then we were doing this peptide summit. And so then because of your strong recommendation, I just cold called him to see if he would come on the podcast. Yeah. And then we had so much fun that we ended up doing a second one.
That's so great.
And so then he is basically, I think, the greatest doctor of his generation. I mean, it's just crazy how amazing and how spiritually and intellectually and clinically deep he is. It just blew me away.
Yes, I just love him. He mentored me, and he was like, I consider him like a father in medicine for me, you know, and I just learned so much.
What would, and so then from a, just this would be interesting for people to hear, because to understand kind of IV therapy and how people think about it, where would you say his thought process or learning from IV therapy came from?
I really think that he took what he learned from Chinese medicine and integrative oncology and created it on his own.
But then a lot of people, like what I do and what you do, I think are somewhat derivative of the type of stuff that he developed and created.
Right, which is how you, every time you kill an infection, you detox the person on the same day with an IV that's compatible with the killing agent, right?
And so there's, that takes us back to, at some level, maybe like a triangle of that you have to kill if there's infections, you've got to detox what you killed, and then the inflammation that's happening as a result of the infection. But then in parallel to that, then that causes there to be a little bit of inflammatory and immune stress. And so then you've got to regulate the whole cycle.
Yes. And so this is such an important point, because before peptides came along and before we understood mast cell activation syndrome, I went straight to detox before I would kill, because I know every time I kill, I'm releasing biotoxins. There's byproducts of dying cells and dying microbes, and there's inflammatory cytokines that are released. So now our patients are already toxic. They're already super inflamed. So if I start to kill an infection in somebody who's this inflamed, they're going to just get more inflamed. So that killing is going to backfire. So what did I do first? I detoxed them first. I brought the inflammation down first as best as I could. And then I'd start to kill and kill and detox at the same time. Then I learned more about mast cell activation syndrome. I treated them for MCAS, for those our patients who don't know what MCAS stands for. It stands for mast cell activation syndrome. So it helped if I treated them with MCAS first. Boy, that made them less, sensitive to detoxification and killing due to the inflammation that comes about as a result. Then come along peptides. A few years ago, I started to use them. And now if I put them on top of the rest of the treatment, everything else is smoother. Everything else is faster.
And I would say, and then sometimes they're going to be synergistic. For example, like I was teaching at the International Peptide Association, IPA. I taught at the A4M IPA meeting for the last 3 or 4 days. And then somebody was giving a lecture on KPV, and that it actually has some antimicrobial effects in addition to sort of regulating and calming that immune system.
Right. But I've noticed that it hasn't bothered my patients.
No. It's yeah. And you know what? It's kind of interesting when you think about mast cell activation syndrome, because I remember vividly when we went to the first lecture at ILADS years ago with Eric. When we were at the lecture when they kind of unveiled mast cell activation. Remember that?
Right. When was that, Matt? Like 4 years ago?
Yeah, it was like four years ago. It's crazy. Yeah. That seems like it was like last week. I know. But, you know, it's interesting, I think, because as you think about something like complex illness, it's kind of interesting to take care of people with long COVID, because long COVID, basically the immune system got stressed out. It's getting all riled up.
Right.
There are inflammatory cytokines. Aspects of the immune system are a little stressed out, such as mast cells. But the nice thing is it's been going on for 6 months, you know, we'll see a lot of this. And generally having good experiences, getting people back the majority of the time relatively quickly.
Right.
Versus Lyme and mold and complex illness, a lot of times we run into people where they've been dealing with that for 15 years, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so then their bodies are so stressed out that I'd love the kind of your thoughts on this. Their bodies are so stressed out that often anything that you do can really throw them sideways.
Exactly.
And so then I would say my whole journey, and I think your whole journey, has been to basically tread as lightly into those waters as you possibly can, because they're dangerous a little bit, but then finding strategies to begin to kind of help them. And then I would say, you know, the peptides have been probably our most successful strategy that we've found, particularly at a 1.0, because just of starting to calm down things and kind of reset the experience.
Right. Right. I mean, they really made such a difference in my practice. I can't even tell you, really, the people that would take years, it could take a year now. And they're still coming to the clinic. They're still coming and staying for 6 months, or coming back and forth every couple months, staying for a couple of weeks, getting all the IVs, getting everything I would have given them anyways, whether it's IV antibiotics or oxidative therapies or detox IVs, they're doing all of it. But I add in the peptides and it's faster.
What are the other peptides that you have found to be super helpful from an intravenous perspective?
BPC-157 has.
Okay.
Yeah.
What sort of dose?
So I've gone up to a vial.
Okay.
I haven't gone higher. How about you?
I will go low dose typically, mm-hmm. for BPC-157. Mm-hmm. So then what would low dose be for me? Sort in the ballpark of 500 micrograms to like a milligram. You know, uh-huh. For a while I was doing like 2 milligrams, and I've kind of backed it down to 1 milligram, uh-huh. versus like KPV, you give KPV and people just feel great. And it doesn't,
because BPC can really rev people up.
Yes. And I will say that I've seen some people have some mast cell activation and some sort of, and so then my general thought process is to start, I start real low.
Yeah.
With BPC-157 IV.
And then I work my way up to the one.
Kind of work my way up. Then these are, it's interesting. Like you could think of these peptides were basically pinching some subcutaneous tissue and injecting them in, and then they're going to be slowly absorbed. Now, what else do we inject into subcutaneous tissue? NAD.
Uh-huh.
And then NAD tends to go also very well IV. And there's going to be tricks and ways to kind of manage and do that. And then in general, I found that the peptides also will work very well, but then I'll also sort of think about how big they are. And so then like small peptides, nobody reacts to. Mm-hmm. And so like if you get GHK without the copper, it's three amino acids. And so it's kind of like a bioregulator. And so then that one people will do good with IV and can do quite a bit.
Yeah. I love GHK with the copper for helping with opening the detox pathways, because we need that copper to help open up the pathways. So.
Oh, good. So then let's go down the detox road. So then if you were going to do GHK with copper, where would you inject it? And then how much would you use?
So subcutaneous. Just under the skin like that in the abdomen. And again, I go low dose just twice a week, 0.1 of a
There will be a moderate amount of people that will, you know, GHK with copper is an amazing peptide and it's really good for connective tissue and collagen, and the copper is good for detox. And I think it's a great way to get the copper. It can sting a moderate amount, but then, you know, that's normal and it goes away. So if that happens to you, don't worry about that. There are more and more people doing interesting protocols. There's a great doctor that teaches in the IPA certification that I was talking to this weekend, and she will mix GHK and peptides in her PRP.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then that's just a little cool idea to kind of throw out that we're in a interesting evolution of what's happening in regenerative medicine in terms of our ability to do things and our ability to kind of turn the healing potential up, often with some of the what I would regard as kind of low cost therapies, which is kind of amazing, because now suddenly we're taking a Toyota and turning it into a Ferrari.
We are. I love that, man.
So then if I said, well, I'll just see what you say, and then I'm going to ask you more questions, but take me top to bottom, talk to me about detox for complex illness. How do you think about it? What are the top few things you use? What are the IVs you use? What are the supplements? What are the herbs? What are the peptides?
Yeah. Okay. This is very exciting. So this could be a really long conversation. I could talk to you about this for like 10 hours.
I'm going to cut you off in 10 hours. So go.
Okay. So first of all, I like to do something that I call pre-tox. A lot of patients just aren't ready for detox. Why? They might have elevated liver enzymes. They might have recurring UTIs. They might have interstitial cystitis, or they're constipated, or they have malabsorptive issues. So now if you try to pull toxins out of cells with this patient, those toxins are just going to recirculate, right? And so I have to set the stage for them to be ready to detox. A lot of people who have SIBO, they don't do well with the diethyls for pulling out heavy metals. So I have to treat the SIBO first.
That's small intestinal bacterial overgrowth.
Right. So there's a lot of work that has to be done for my patients before they're ready for detox. Now, what's interesting is so many, I used to be a yoga instructor. I love yoga. I know a lot of yoga studios might say, come do your detox, or the local grocery co-op. And that's just not, it's not personalized at all. And so this has to be, in my mind, detox has to be personalized. Is the person ready for it? If not, let's get them ready. And so I'll evaluate all these things by labs. And then, go ahead.
What are your favorite labs for detox, or for kind of assessing toxicity?
Yeah. So let's talk about metals first. I like to look at metals on unprovoked and provoked first. So to keep our medical licenses intact, we have to look at unprovoked as well. That's just hands down, we have to do that. Not only that, but it's going to give us the information we need as in, is a patient currently exposed? So I'm looking at blood and urine.
So then for just for people to hear, what that means is we could take some urine, just wake up and go to the bathroom and then catch some urine. And then another thing that we could do is we could take a chelating agent, which would help pull some metals out of the body and then catch some urine after that. And so the second one is called a provoked. And so then that second one is going to be trying to get a sense of what are the total body stores? And that first one is going to be trying to say, is there such an amount of toxins or metals in the blood, in the body, that even without any provocation, we'll see it? And so then we're looking at those two things.
Right. And so it is so important to look at both, because the first one tells us, is there something acute that's happening? Mm-hmm. Are you eating too much fish? Is it in your drinking water? Is it in your home somewhere? Mm-hmm. The second one is, what's the body burden? What's in the cells? So metals accumulate in the cells of our organs. So our kidneys, our liver, even our thyroid. And so when we're provoking, we're getting a sense of the burden in the cells.
Okay, perfect. So then we'll go category by category. So then this would be category one. And so then we go, oh my God, there's some metals, and let's say there's some mercury and lead. So what would be kind of, do you prefer IV chelation or oral chelation or both? And how would you think about that?
Okay. So I do prefer IV. It's going to be faster. It's more efficacious. Now, oral though, can be very helpful because funguses and parasites sequester metals. And so when we're killing those bugs, we can give somebody oral to mop up the metals that spill as we kill.
What are your favorite things to use for oral chelation?
So if I'm going to use a medication, then DMSA. And you know, I don't know of any herbs that chelate as strong as these medications, but I've always got herbs on board. I'm supporting the organs of elimination, the kidney, the liver, the lymph with herbs. I'm tonifying those organs. And I'm also using herbs to tap on them, if you will, to say, okay, it's time to detox. It's going to make those organs detoxify more. I've actually formulated herbs for that, herbal tinctures for that. And binders, of course, to bind up the metals and flush them out of the system.
We interviewed Chris Shade, who's a wealth of information on this. And so then he has a thing that he does called push catch. Uh-huh. And so then what he'll do is give someone some digestive bitters, which kind of turns on the liver and the gallbladder and kind of encourages it to squeeze and push any toxins that are, or any waste products out. And then he'll have people take charcoal. And then if they have metals, he'll he has a powder called IMD, intestinal metal detox.
Right. So then, I do the same thing.
Okay.
Push and catch. So I'm pushing, I'm having people take these herbs to push.
Yes.
Catching. I love Dr. Eliza's products. I like Chris Shade's as well, but I tend to use Pectisol, which is modified citrus pectin.
Yes.
Because Dr. Eliza has done a lot of research to show that it binds inflammatory cytokines.
100%. Mm-hmm. And has this effect on galactan 3, right, which is, and then will you combine his product with a charcoal or just will you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I will.
So then I'm deeply a fan of his also, and I kind of like them both. I think most patients with a little toxicity can benefit from some of these concepts of some binding, some pushing in terms of toxicity. And if you say, oh, okay, what doctors have been doing this? Doctors have been using herbs probably for a couple thousand years,
right,
to do that in fact task.
Exactly. And thing is, our bodies are set up for detoxification. That's what our liver, our kidneys, our skin, our gut does, right? But our world is so toxic now, we haven't evolved as fast as our world has become toxic to be able to handle this. So now I am giving patients a lot more than what patients needed even 20 years ago. This is where the IVs come in, phosphatidylcholine, IV glutathione, the IVs to pull the metals out, you know.
Yeah, you know what? That is one of my favorite all-time IVs, that phosphatidylcholine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do it. Now, will you be, if this one's an interesting one for, because the phosphatidylcholine is in dextrose.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of our other IVs are in saline. Do you like to do the phosphatidylcholine and then all the other stuff, or do you do all the other stuff and then the phosphatidylcholine at the end?
You know what? I'm going between both. So I'm assessing. Okay. So I'm looking, let's go back to your first question. Cause your first question of what are you testing for regards to toxins? Because that ties in to what IVs I'm using and when.
Okay,
so, yeah. So I'm also looking for glyphosate.
Are you doing that with the GPL?
Mm-hmm.
So then that's a pesticide that's important to look at 100%.
Right. I'm having them provoke with 2 grams of glutathione IV, and then they'll catch their first urine right after. I've had them do unprovoked and provoked as well for people who want that data, you know, and they have the money to spend on it. It's great to do both if you can.
I totally support. That's a great idea. That's a really good one.
Yeah. So I'm looking for, I'm using the Great Plains Lab, looking for glyphosate, mycotoxins in those people that's indicated, and their tox panel, looking for chemicals, other chemicals, solvents and pesticides, things like that.
If you have somebody who you think might be a person that got exposed to mycotoxins, Are you doing antibody testing and urine testing?
I am. So I'm looking at their mold IgG allergens because I want to know, do you have an allergy to the mold spores themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Allergy doctors like to look at just IgE. And mm-hmm. So the patient has gone to the allergist, IgE is always 0. And the patient says, I don't have a mold allergy. And I say, wait a second, let's look at your IgGs because the IgEs are just looking at the mucosal tissues.
Is that with Andrew Campbell's test company?
No, that's a different one. We'll do that too. I look at my myco to look at the allergens, the IgGs to their mycotoxins. In fact, I'm trying to use that one more than the Great Plains, because when I use Andrew Campbell's, my myco, not only am I seeing levels of mycotoxins, but I'm also seeing if they're having an allergic response to
my mycotoxins. No, I think he's great. I'm a fan.
Yeah, but then just on LabCorp, you can get mold IgGs to look at if you're allergic, not to the mycotoxins, but to the mold itself.
And right.
So I'm thinking, okay, do you have an allergy to the mold itself? Do you have a high mycotoxin load? And are you allergic to the mycotoxins? Do you have an exposure? And so I'm having them start with an ERMI test from Envirobiomics because I like the write-up from Envirobiomics for their ERMI test at home.
That's a mold test for home. So then this is a good one, because imagine you might be sitting at home having some brain fog, difficulty concentrating, and fatigue and low energy and some of these classic symptoms. And so then you'd come to Nafisa and then she would kind of start to talk to you, and then you would go, oh, this person might have mold. And so then looking to see if the mold, in terms of antibodies, looking to see if there's mycotoxins in the urine, and then doing some testing at home. So then basically this is all kind of investigative work of trying to figure out of these super common symptoms that lots of people have, there's a handful of different things. Could be a tick-borne infection, could be mold, could be chronic viral, could be long COVID, right? It's
all of these for our patients. And let's go back to long COVID. What I've done is tested their other infections. Very, very often I'm using a T-cell test, I'm using InfectoLab. I'm seeing that there is another infection that's active And when we press on those infections, when we treat those infections, along with everything else we're doing for long COVID, the person does get better. So it's not just, oh, there's inflammation only from COVID. No, there's very often Epstein-Barr virus or cytomegalovirus, often mycoplasma simultaneously. And the patient has no idea.
That's 100%. So InfectoLab is this test that looks to see what your T cells reactivity is. And so you might not even be making antibodies to Borrelia, which is Lyme disease, but then you could have long COVID. And then all of a sudden, all kinds of things happen. And then we do a test and we show your T cells are having a dogfight with Borrelia. And so then that kind of helps us orient, oh, okay. So then that case, we would say probably maybe this person maybe had Lyme in the background.
Exactly. I tell them, so this was a subclinical infection, meaning your immune system was able to handle Lyme and it should be able to. Right? So now we're going back to that immune modulation. Their system was able to handle that infection that they should hands down be able to. Then along comes COVID and the flare of inflammatory cytokines. And now that stirs the infection that was just under the surface the patient was able to handle. And now they can't. So they think it's just long COVID, but it's not. It's the waking up of dormant infections that they didn't even know they had.
Go ahead.
Oh, that they didn't even know they had to begin with.
Right. And now this is a crucially important concept to kind of stay on for a sec, because I think maybe this just wasn't quite in the consciousness. And I have to admit, like 5 years ago, I don't even think that I really understood this to this extent, you know. And I think hanging out with you and Eric Gordon and all of our kind of friends has educated me. But this idea that a lot of us have been exposed to infections. A high percentage of the sexually active people have been exposed to herpes.
Right.
Except they're not having a herpes outbreak, but then even if you're not having a herpes outbreak, if you get a big stress, suddenly herpes can come out. Mm-hmm. And then in the same way, if someone has a big immune stress like COVID, then these underlying things could be Epstein-Barr, which comes from mono, or could be Lyme disease, or could be mold. These things can kind of come out.
Right.
But now you're going through a beautiful process of talking to them, doing diagnostic testing, and trying to sort out what those things are, I guess.
Right. And there's so many of those things. It's never just one toxin or never just one bug. So now back to toxins, all of this weaves in together. That's why we're kind of going off to talk about immune modulation and bugs and coming back to toxins, because they're all
the same. All similar. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. Go ahead.
Back yeah.
To toxins.
So then I'm testing the other toxin, testing the chemicals, and then I'm treating. So now back to the question you asked me, well, what are you using first? The detox, I'm using it all. I'm going back and forth. I'm looking at the different layers. Well, how bad is the mercury? How bad is the lead or the arsenic, whatever the metal is? It's never just one. And then what about the glyphosate? Some people, their glyphosate is through the roof, like I've never seen before. Typically, I'm going to try and bring their glyphosate down.
And what's the best thing to detox glyphosate?
So IV, phosphatidylcholine, glutathione, I'm always giving the minerals and amino acids because they're cofactors for detoxification. So I'm giving them that. And then of course, Dr. Elias's GlyphoCleanse is a great oral product to help with that. But so for steps for detox, I'm looking at their minerals. I'm looking at their amino acid status on the labs, because I know that if those are low, then I could give them chelating agents. I could give them phosphatidylcholine IVs, all of that till the cows come home, but they're just gonna keep recirculating those toxins unless the minerals and the amino acids are in good standing. So I'm getting
I do, that. I do, uh, every 2 weeks at a minimum, I do an IV, and I do, I always do minerals, and and I find it to be really kind of awesome.
It's awesome. Oh, I have an IV formula. We call it the anti-anxiety formula. Oh. It's minerals. I'll share the formula with you later. If you don't have it already, amino acids, minerals, glycine, taurine, some vitamin C in it. And oh, it chills the patient out. And I tell them, I'm giving this to you, not only because, you know, you're a little bit anxious, but also because it's giving you the cofactors for detoxification. So I love this IV because it's so well-rounded, and the patients very often request that one.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, if I went back to my thought process like 15 years ago, and then I was dealing with anxiety every day because I was like doing anesthesia for people.
Right.
I had a very brick and mortar idea of what anxiety was, and that for some reason, maybe someone had anxiety because of some thought process.
Right.
Or maybe because of some susceptibility, or because they were got addicted to benzos. But that was basically my three ideas, but that would be about it. Wow. Now, and you can weigh in on this, then we'll go back, but I think it's super bears saying that. Now I think, oh, maybe they have a tick-borne infection. Maybe they've got some mycotoxins. Maybe they've got some systemic inflammation. Maybe they're weak on their cofactors and they just can't detox, right? Man,
nobody taught us this in medical school. We had to learn this with patients, you know, mentors, of course, you know, and inflammatory cytokines cross the blood-brain barrier. Bugs cross the blood-brain barrier. Now, every time, and I'm like you, when I first came out of medical school, I thought that anxiety was usually about an emotional thing. Oh, they're having a hard time at home, or oh, they had a lot of abuse in their lives, or bad marriage, they need therapy. And so it's very common that that goes on too, but I'm never not thinking about a bug anymore or toxins.
And then within that, then this has been kind of one of borderline my favorite things to sort of that I've become aware of. And then even kind of personally with my friends and family and stuff like that, because now if I see somebody anxious or upset or this or that, then a lot of times I just start to wonder, oh, I wonder what's going on. Maybe there's something like something in one of these categories. Right. And so then I kind of give them a mulligan as a result of that, because I'm sort of like, oh, okay. If to anxious behavior makes me think that there's something on an infection or immune stress.
Right.
And then as a result, I have a more lighthearted approach to everybody, and that, which is super low stress for me. And then if I ever have any stress, I begin to wonder, oh, I wonder if anything is going on. And then interestingly, now we have all of these things, you know what I mean? Like there's a peptide that's an anti-infection called LL37. And so then like, and I will notice like if people are stressed, sometimes just doing something like thymosin alpha 1 and LL37 or just LL37 or immune support or anything in any of these categories. And then you realize in terms of complex illness, anxiety, the impact that it has on the emotional system is a 10, and vice versa, right?
Yes, our patients suffer from so much anxiety, and then they're told from other doctors or from family members, just, you know, pull yourself together. This like, what's wrong with you? You know, go get some therapy. You've been anxious for too long, or you're making this up. You're creating your problems. And actually, that's far from the truth. People are really anxious when they're sick like this, and they've got inflammatory cytokines crossing the blood-brain barrier and infections crossing the blood-brain barrier, mycotoxins also crossing the blood-brain barrier. It's going to cause anxiety.
Right. But so then what my teaching for people is, oh, guess what? probably part of how you feel is just because of your biochemistry.
Yeah.
And then I kind of get people to have a slightly lighthearted approach towards it because I say, oh, okay, well, we're just going to kind of try to work on potentially doing some things that might treat the cause of that. And so then now I'm doing something with an eye towards seeing how it feels.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm not, if you can kind of get into that psychology, then now you're not overwhelmed by the fact that you have anxiety because you're doing something that begins to impact.
Right. And the patient begins to even feel better about themselves. They boost their confidence to know that this is something that's coming from the outside.
It's right. Yeah. Different. That's the whole journey is to help people feel better about themselves.
Yes.
You know, it got almost back to kind of where we started on sexual stuff.
Right.
But it's also just like in a way we're out trying to win hearts and minds and mm-hmm. kind of help people basically realize, oh, I'm going to be okay. We're going to get better.
Yes. And they do. And they are okay.
Yeah.
They do a little bit of work and yeah. you're there for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then in terms of, did we cover detox in terms of, and so then in terms of your detox strategies, we've got binders, we've got chelation if there's metals.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of mycotoxins, just since that's a topic that you know a lot about, what are your favorite binders?
So again, I've noticed that Pactisol is amazing. Back to Dr. Elias's, I love it. I also like to use Takasumi Supreme for mm-hmm. charcoal. Sometimes the patient does need cholestyramine. So I'll give them 500 milligrams 3 times a day or 1,000 in the morning and 500 at night, just low dose. That really helps with my.
Do you use alcohol?
Yeah, but I use cholestyramine more.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to me. There's so many, as good Lyme doctors as there are, there's that many protocols.
Exactly.
But then I would be very similar to you. We'll use Welcol sometimes. We'll use cholestyramine sometimes. We'll use sometimes we'll use Takasumi Supreme. Sometimes a lot of times we'll use Chris Shade's charcoal that we like a lot, the Ultra Binder. And then we always use a modified citrus pectin. And I like that it can go, it goes well with everything. And then Isaac told me that you can take it with food even. So it kind of is an anti, it's like a 2-for-1 because it's an anti-inflammatory binder.
Right. That's why I love it.
Yeah. In terms of upregulating detox pathways, what are your top 3 ideas?
So definitely I'm giving them the cofactors. You know what I'm doing? I'm also looking at their methylation panel by Health Diagnostics.
Oh, good.
Right, because I want to see if the glutathione is oxidized or reduced, because I know if I give a patient the end product of methylation, glutathione, and I give them methylated B vitamins, that's going to upregulate their detox system. But some people aren't ready for glutathione or they're not ready for methylated B vitamins, and that glutathione panel is going to give me the sense of that. Do I need to work on cofactors first? Do I need to give them a little bit of SAM-E first?
Mm-hmm.
And then once I set the stage, if it needs to be set for my patients, it usually needs to be set, then I'll give them glutathione and B vitamins to upregulate it. And also my herbal formulations will, the ones that are the push herbs.
The push herbs, yeah. And then I always liked, you shared this one with me a long time ago, but I love the concept of it from a detox perspective as your lymphatic drainage IV.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
And I'll tell them about that one.
Yeah. So it has some taurine in it. It has some lymphomyosat, heparcomp, solidago, mucosa in it, which are German homeopathic drainage remedies. excuse me, just one sec. A little bit of magnesium, a little bit of vitamin C as well. And I now met a lymphatic drainage specialist who will go to my patients' homes.
Oh, really? Oh, that's amazing.
Yes, but she lives in the North Bay. So she'll come to people who are, you know, closer to this side. So if you have any patients closer to this side. Oh,
yeah. The lymphatic drainage is just one of the great things in the world. Basically, they do these real light massages that kind of help to move basically lymph and turn on lymph and, right. and drain.
Right. And dry skin brushing. Mm-hmm. And hot and cold contrast showers. So using all these old school naturopathic techniques, which I think worked so well back in the day on their own when people weren't as toxic. Now,
do you do a hot and cold plunge?
Oh, myself, I need to work up to that.
Okay. So yeah. I'm going to sell you on this. I'm going to sell you so hard on this.
I know I need it, Matt.
Okay, it's gonna change your life. I
know.
You know what? There's nobody. There's nobody that I ever met in my life that avoids cold like Barb. She doesn't have much fat on her.
Yeah.
And so then she's always cold, and so then we got a cold plunge. Uh-huh. And, you know, about a year ago, and I'd been into it before, but then there's probably been like 2 days that I didn't cold plunge. Mm-hmm. And what happens is kind of like fasting. It's kind of like fasting. Like when you first fast, all of a sudden you think, I'm so hungry, I'm definitely going to die right now.
Right.
And I'm definitely going to 100% not be alive in like 3-4 seconds. And then... Yeah. All of a sudden, next thing you know, you're like, oh, I'm fine. I'm not even hungry anymore. It's like, and so that, and then once you kind of go through that and start to fast for a few days, next thing, like now I could just like stop eating and then I could not eat for a couple of days. Right. Same thing with cold. You get into the cold and you think, I'm definitely going to die right away. And then when you're breathing, and then you start, I do these breathing exercises. And then next thing you know, I sit in there for like 6 or 7 minutes of crazy.
That's great. Eric can do that too. He just
I promise you I'm gonna get you into and it's gonna change your life. Okay. And we like it for patients. What one thing that I see on your list that is, I think in all of these topics, in terms of detox, in terms of immune, and in terms of problems. The area that takes a hit a lot of times is the brain in terms of neuroinflammation. Thoughts about that with respect to peptides and maybe any general thoughts?
Yeah. What I've noticed is that my patients who still have a high infectious load, if I give them the neuropeptides, doesn't work yet. So I have to clean them up. It's like, this is something I know I need to remove the insults first, kind of like treating the mitochondria as well. So I remove the insults. The thing is, when you remove insults, the patients are often still inflamed because with chronic illness, you can remove the inciting event, but the system is already set up. The inciting event is already set up. The neuroinflammation is already set up, the inflammatory cytokines and the mast cell activation syndrome. So I can pull out the triggers and the system is still stuck, say, the cell danger response, right? Stuck in inflammation, that's CDR1. And so when I come in with the neuropeptides after, it really helps. And I had to learn it the hard way. If I gave somebody C-Lank or cerebrolysin first, it did nothing. So it's like, okay, let's wait. And now it works. I like to give people RG3. It's not a peptide, the synapsin, but that really helps with the microglial inflammation.
This is a nasal spray. And then that has
RG3. And then so C-Lank is going to help to elevate the BDNF.
Mm-hmm.
So it's some detox. It's cerebroprotective. Mm-hmm. And it helps with some of the toxins that are latched onto the receptor sites.
And so are you using C-Max also?
Yeah. But that was one that I really, really wanted to work in the beginning with my patients. And I noticed Sorry, no.
Hmm.
Not. After it will, definitely. It's amazing for after I've killed off infections.
How long in terms of treating, working on killing it, would that be more mostly with antibiotic type of approaches?
So, sometimes I have to give people IV antibiotics. Most of my patients, they don't even need it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like 15% of the patients will need that. And then...
And so then when you're working on killing, then you're mainly thinking about oxidative therapies in terms of
therapies. And I hate to give people oral antibiotics for a long time. I don't do that. I'd rather give them IV antibiotics for a longer time because it bypasses the gut. People are walking around with trashed guts from being on oral antibiotics for years. And so at Gordon Medical, if someone is using IV antibiotics, it's usually just 6 weeks they need it for. We'll give it them for 6 weeks. Maybe they'll take a break for a month. If they need another 6 weeks, we can do that. It's faster. Always they're getting detox at the same time on the same day. I think you asked me this as well. So if we're giving IV antibiotic, I'm also giving phosphatidylcholine or glutathione same day after.
Okay. So then this is, I think, also helpful to hear for people that, imagine there's a spectrum of infection. And so there might be out of control infection over here that really requires antibiotics. But then what percentage of that? And then I like to hear you say that because we would be similar. There's going to be a small percentage of our patients that we would do antibiotics for complex illness. The vast majority have immune dysregulation and neurological inflammation and inflammatory cytokines. And they're in kind of a smoldering cytokine type of storm.
Exactly. We calm that down. Oftentimes they don't need IV antibiotics, not at all. Just some herbs to kill off Lyme is often, that does it.
You know, I was with you also at that lecture that the guy from Hopkins gave up in Marin. He was saying, oh, you need to be on 4 antibiotics, but I would say, oh, we do give 4 antibiotics because we give ozone, we'll do herbs and often, you know, more than one, and then LL37 and potentially thymosin type of peptides.
High dose vitamin C.
Yeah. Great.
Argent and silver.
So argent and silver, which is going to be, great, both in terms of breaking down biofilms and stuff like that on the nose, but also intravenously.
Right.
Yeah. And they're probably the best company.
Yeah.
From that perspective. And so then we're up to 6 or 7, you know, in terms of, and then that kind of gives you the idea. And I like then imagine that if you were going along in your life and you were a patient of Nafisa, all of a sudden something happens that was crazy stressful. And so then immune stress comes like right here, but then you might come in and give 1 or 2 or 3 of those things, but probably not all of them.
Right.
And then bring them right back down to here.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly that. If you can come in with peptides quick, boom.
Peptides quick too. And so then we'll often talk to people who actually have an infection. We'll give them LL37 right away.
Yeah.
And so then they could come in for an IV vitamin C and then we'll bring that down. And so then part of taking care of complex illness is, I think, really clinically figuring out everything that's happening, making a map of that, and then making a plan to kind of treat that and then do all the things that we do.
Right.
But then the other part of that is then having an overall strategy of what constellations we're using to treat kind of as we go, but then having strategies to basically, when the wheels start to fall a little bit off the bus, because if you do that, we fix it before it comes all the way off.
Yeah. So we're watching our patients like with eagle eyes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm watching because I know everybody is going to surprise me in some way. Mm-hmm. Somebody every day is going to react in a way that's opposite.
That aspect of medicine is so humbling. I can't believe it.
Yes. Yes. So we have to watch them. And then they're a moving target. Every time you give them therapy, something's going to change, usually for the better. Sometimes it was too much. It goes the other way. It was the right medicine at the wrong time or too high a dosage. We have to dial it down. But when you give someone something and it goes the wrong way, it exposes what's under the surface, exposes where the problem is very often. So I tell them, well, it's good in a way this happened. Not that I want you to suffer with that. Thank God it's just a day, maybe 3 days max of feeling bad, but it shows us where the weak link is.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So back to peptides for neuroinflammation, Cmax, C-length, and then cerebrolysin potentially.
Lysin, yeah.
How's your experience been with that?
With cerebrolysin? I like it. It helps them. This one I've noticed, it gives them a little bit of change if I try to give it to them in the beginning, whereas the Cmax was nothing in the beginning. And then afterwards, you know, afterwards, when I say afterwards, I mean the killing is done. Most of the toxins are out and they're stuck with these inflammatory patterns. These help to break them, I notice.
There's a Willie Nelson song.
I love it when you sing at your clinic.
There's a Willie Nelson song, the time of the preacher, and he has the line, the lesson's over and the killing's begun.
It's perfect, actually, right?
I think yesterday was Willie Nelson's birthday.
We were
singing quite a bit of songs. It's interesting. My ability to sing got about 100% better ever since I started doing peptides.
Really?
And I think it just neural, I don't know whether what, and my memory and everything went way up. Uh-huh. And so then I wonder, it's definitely fixing neurological inflammation. And, you know, if now what happens is, and I'll do typically an IV, and then after about 2/3 of the way through the IV, all of a sudden I'll feel like a vibration in my chest.
Uh-huh.
Like I can feel it now, like I would be able to sing well. And it's probably our favorite thing. And I'll talk to people who also will start to feel this the more they start to do it. And like when we, all the people who we really liked, like I couldn't sing at their register. Like I could never sing Elton John. I could never sing with Jackson Browne. And then now, basically 100% of the time, if you were with us, we would be like singing along. To like
So next time we come and visit you, come visit us, you're going to have to sing.
Okay, that sounds good.
I want to hear it.
Well, that was an amazing conversation. Anything else on a peptide or a complex illness or a detox or wellness front you want to tell me about?
I just want to tell the patients that there's hope. Mm-hmm. They come to us and they're a little hopeless. They don't have a diagnosis, or they have wastebasket diagnoses like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and they don't know what's being caused. When you come to doctors like Matt and I, we investigate to find out what is really underneath there, and we treat that, and we treat your symptoms at the same time, and we get you better.
Mm-hmm. So if I want to come see you, how do I find you?
I'm at Gordon Medical. The website is www.gordonmedical.com.
Okay, fantastic. Well, it's a delight for me to talk to you. I give you my very highest recommendation. If you have complex illness, or if you're interested in this stuff, go find them and go see them and talk to them, because they're amazing human beings and amazing doctors. And I'm grateful to have you as a friend.
Thank you, Matt. I'm grateful to have you as a friend. I highly recommend you. I've got to tell our audience about your injection therapies. It is your podcast, but like, I've got to tell them that you can heal pain very quickly and masterfully. I've never seen anybody with a needle like you. So,
you know,
what you do.
Oh, thank you. You know, the really interesting, since this is a peptide summit, the interesting thing about that front, and I have a good one for you. That's a good one. And I was teaching this at this peptide certification over the weekend. Uh-huh. But imagine that what I do is I do nerve hydrodissection, basically at every nerve in the body, where I would use an ultrasound and I would put my needle right next to a nerve and then create a halo of fluid around it.
I've watched it, guys. It's
kind of amazing.
Watch, amazing.
But now I'm teaching people a lot of times to go right near where a nerve is, uh-huh. and then grab a little subcutaneous tissue and then put peptides superficial to that nerve.
I love it.
And so then it's an approach to do, and I find that it's very helpful and very helpful along the lines of, you know, when we use peptides, and so like when I do peptides for Barb at home, I never inject in subcutaneous tissue. I just say, oh, okay, what is that? What hurts today? And then whether it's in the leg. And so I have kind of a little, when you come, I'm going to show you my kind of updated how I'm doing it. Uh-huh. But then I'm doing little subcutaneous injections anywhere where people have pain.
Me too. I do that.
Yeah. So then, yeah. But imagine if you could hear, I think that might prevent 30% of what I do, you know, and I'm always kind of looking to push things more out into consciousness and society.
Yes.
And then as a, if you can really begin to impact pain in that way, it's such an amazing. And then interestingly, we'll find the same thing where injecting with an insulin needle by joints, mm-hmm. then can be very helpful in terms of managing pain, both where muscles kind of insert around joints, we kind of by the meniscus and kind of all over. And obviously we know the anatomy pretty well, so we're comfortable doing that. But then what we do is we're starting a journey of teaching people where they can do things safely. Uh-huh. And then it's kind of like everything else we're talking about. And a lot of patients with complex illness will have pain.
Right.
Teaching people with injecting tiny little insulin syringes around areas that hurt and beginning to kind of modulate that, I think is.
It changes. I mean, I've had people just after I've given them just subcutaneous injections of BP-157 have tears in their eyes. Like, I thought I had to live with that pain forever. And this went away instantaneously. Just simple shots like that. It's magic.
That's why I have a little bit of a missionary appeal towards kind of having these conversations, because as you know, we really grew up in the opioid epidemic. You know what I mean? The San Francisco, when I was a resident at San Francisco General Hospital and at Parnassus and the VA at UCSF, was this opioid epidemic. And then we were at the same time in the world of anesthesia, they called pain the fifth vital sign. They gave us a big lecture in my second year. Uh-huh. And they said, we need to stamp out pain. And then they said, and here's how you do it. You're going to do it with these opioids. And so then they're going to be really strong and we're getting better and better opioids. And so then they like weaponized, you know, a whole generation of anesthesiologists and pain doctors to go give, you know, but then you get this, we've created, you know, an entire generation of people that are dependent on opioids.
Right.
And interestingly, things like BPC-157 tend to regulate, and just like the immune system can get regulated, peptides can regulate peripheral nerves. And then when you regulate and calm those nerves down, a lot of times they have less pain.
Right. TP4-FRAG, right, has that neurological, I haven't looked at the research on it, but maybe you can tell me a little more about that if you know, about nerve regeneration.
So then there's a patent for thymus and beta 4 and peripheral neuropathy, that's going to be one thing. Number two, there's an immune benefit thymus and beta 4 fragments. Right. And many patients with nerve pain have an immune component to their pain. Right. So then you've got that aspect of it. The fragments of thymus and beta 4 are extremely anti-inflammatory, and almost all neuropathy means it's inflammation. And so then there's an aspect of just regulating the inflammation. The next thing is that the 17 to 23 fragment is very helpful in terms of promoting connective tissue and healing connective tissue. And then if you said, what would be like kind of at a high level, somebody told me, and I loved that they said this, they said, they were watching me and they said, oh, you know what I think you do is you just go to different places in the body and find where nerves are inflamed. And then you fix the connective tissue there and make that tissue less inflamed. And then the nerve heals.
Right.
Which I was kind of like, oh yeah, that is exactly what I do.
That's what I see you do.
but so then interestingly, placental matrix is anti-inflammatory, and there's science that it will help axonal growth. Mm-hmm. The peptides at some level are going to be doing that from anti-inflammatory and connective tissue. There's going to be some neurological mechanisms. There's also for BPC-157 will promote angiogenesis. And so it's going to promote blood vessel health. And 100% of nerves have blood vessels somewhere nearby because they need support. So there's going to be a diversity of, and then for example, thymus and beta 4 fragment 1 to 4 is even more anti-inflammatory than the 17 to 23. And so then you've got and then you're going to probably have some peptides that are going to actually have direct neurological mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And so then you're also going to be able to impact nerves by just making the mitochondria and that nerve healthier. And so that's going to work better. You can do that with mitochondrial peptides, or you could do that with supplements and all that whole concept, or with NAD.
NAD, I was about to say.
Yeah. So then, but then this would be 100% like everything that I do and like everything that you do. There's not one answer. There's a diversity of answers. There's a diversity of things that we have, and there's simple things and more complex things. But then I think if you've got pain, if you've got complex illness, if you got both, now you're beginning to hear, oh, there's probably some things that I can do at home. There's some things that I can kind of begin to do with certain people. And so then now you kind of get into this evolving process. And then that takes me back to the number one thing that I'm trying to do is give a little bit of hope. Like you said, oh, there's hope. Right. And we've got you. It's just a journey.
Exactly that. It's a journey.
Yeah.
People come out even more involved than when they started. In their spirit, in their mind, in their hearts. It's so beautiful to see people at the end of the journey. They're done and they go out in the world. They have their lives back and they're wiser in their own way.
Yeah. If you can shepherd people through that, I almost, as I'm listening to it, I feel like I kind of went through that myself in a way, because, you know, I gave this lecture and somebody asked me a question and I don't know what kind of caused me to go down, but then like 8 people came up to me and afterwards and thanked me for saying it. Mm. But I said, at some level, everybody here in this room is a doctor or a practitioner that fundamentally you realize you kind of had a problem. And so you got into integrative wellness because you're trying to solve your own problems.
Right.
And that was kind of at some level, the case of me, partly just because I was breathing in halogenated hydrocarbons all day during anesthesia, because the gases, you can't keep from breathing some of that stuff in. and toxins and stuff like that. And then the detox strategies that you talk about, it's amazing. When I first did those, it was very difficult. And now I just feel crystal clear all the time. And then when I do those IVs, I feel even more perfect. But it's, I can't imagine being alive without knowing this. It's the, this is like the greatest thing that I ever discovered in my whole life.
I feel the same way, Matt.
Isn't it amazing?
We're so blessed.
Yeah.
To know these things and to work with the patients that we do. So,
oh no, it's my favorite thing in the world. But actually, I'm 50-50. It's 50% working with the patients that I do and 50% talking to the doctors like you, because
yes,
we're kind of sharing information. And so what's going to happen is in our personal lives, you and Eric are going to come have dinner with us. And in the meantime, what we'll do is think about a topic, and then I'm going to have you come on our just regular podcast. So look out for that, everybody. And thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt. So great, as always.
Oh, you're welcome. You're the best.
Thank you.